Welcome to Blind Like Me. It's Bill Pargan coming into your houses, your homes, your wherever your business is, into your computers with another Blind Like Me. Our guest is Derek Lane, and I don't even know where you're from, sir. I didn't even ask you.
That's all good. I'm from Morganton, North Carolina, which is basically a little town that few people have actually heard of.
Morgantown, North Carolina.
Morganton, M-O-R-G-A-N-T-O-N, yeah.
Morganton, North Carolina.
Correct.
What would that be, close to anything we would have heard of?
Hickory.
No.
Not much better?
No, not much better.
Okay, well, case in point.
Case in point. It's a little town. How many people reckon, you think?
I really have no clue. But it's not so confining that you do something and you screw up and, you know, 80 years later, the story's spreading around still.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that little.
Do you have a Radio Shack?
Yes.
You do?
We are that big.
You have a Walmart?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you got to have those two things.
Oh, yeah.
Radio Shack, Walmarts, and Dairy Queens, and every place has got a Dairy Queen, so.
This is true.
And what is your age?
I'm 22.
22. So you're a whole lot younger than most of the folks we interview.
Yeah, so we're going to, I doubt if we talk about high school, you know, childhood and high school and college.
We'll be fine.
That's all we've got.
But we go much further. We can't go any further than that because you haven't.
I haven't, exactly.
You're in college. But you are a... Tim, I met you through my friend Tim Cummings.
Right.
Who said that you were... He said, Phil, you're going to love this kid. He's an audio nut, like just like you and me.
Yeah, I am.
And so there we go. Another audio guy. And we're using your... This is your passive phone patch.
Yeah, it's a little JK Audio thing. It's called an auto hybrid. And it works for one way or the other kinds of things. If you're shoving something down a phone line or picking something up from a line...
It does well.
It does well. Using both, I couldn't use this on my show because... I'd have to do a lot of messing around every time somebody called.
Uh-huh.
So I have a digital phone patch from JK Audio. It's called a broadcast host, and I use that for the show. But for something like this, when I don't mind hearing myself loads and just a little bit of somebody else,
and
I have nothing against you personally or anything. But
and you are not doing the recording. I am.
Exactly.
So
that's all that matters.
I'm the one. But for two-way, this little passive phone patch really doesn't do very well.
No, one way or the other, it's great.
Okay.
So if I was just recording you, or I was just sending something to you to record, which is basically what I'm doing now.
Which is what you're doing, yes.
Then it's perfect.
Okay. All right. Now, you're talking on this phone patch now, just sort of to clarify things so people won't go, wow, he sure has a good-sounding phone. You're on a microphone right now.
Right.
What kind of microphone?
It's only a $60 mic, which sounds expensive, and compared to all the $20 and less computer mics, it is. But it's still a large diaphragm studio condenser mic. And for what it is, it's really clean.
Well, it really is. And they talk about, if you think that mic's expensive, that's a very cheap or inexpensive mic compared to what you can spend for microphones.
I've seen mics up to thousands of dollars in price. And I'm not crazy, but, you know.
It does, and some of them don't sound any better than the $60 one you have.
No, the only difference is noise floor. In other words, for those who don't know, how much hiss you would get if you turned it really, really loud. In other words, if you wanted to record a flea, you couldn't do it with this mic without getting hiss. But if you're tracking vocals or you're doing voiceover work or something like that,
they're
this
fine.
Thing's more than enough.
It really sounds good. It has nice highs. Its dynamics seem to be good, and it's made. Who made this mic?
It's CAD. It's a CAD GXL 2400 mic.
Okay, I have a couple of CAD mics that are a little flat mic with several little switches on them. I bought them cheap from a guy who needed some money, and I don't know the model number, but they have a pad, and they have a high-low switch also. You can't change the pattern. But anyway, there's used to there were only two or three microphone makers, Shure and Electro Voice and people like that. Now there are thousands.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the proliferation of audio gear and audio equipment is just, in the last 15 years, is just exponential because of the Internet. And I was thinking very seriously about buying a Neumann. They make a Neumann for about $700, and I want to know what one sounds like. And I figured the only way to find out is buy one.
If you had somebody that you knew that was incredibly rich or that had loads and loads and loads of production stuff, you could just borrow one and hook it up and see if it's worth it.
Well, I think there's a place in California you can rent such things.
Of course, the ultimate question is, are you happy with the way your setup sounds? Because I had to learn this the hard way. If you're happy with the way your setup sounds, don't look at anything else, because all of a sudden you won't be.
I'm never happy.
Oh.
I'm never going to be happy. Stuff comes in here all the time.
Yeah.
I buy stuff constantly to try to, I don't know what I'm trying to do. But I'm about to the point that I've got everything I need now.
Yeah.
I'm using a Studio Projects mic. Have you heard about that?
Yeah. Neil Ewers, who is also a very interesting individual, did some stuff on Blind Cool Tech.
About the Studio Projects mic?
Yeah.
It's a pretty fair mic. All right, you alluded to your show. Tell us about your show and where it is.
All right, I do a show. It's not to steal a phrase or steal the phrase of open mouth, open mic, but it is basically that. On TBRN, which is that stands for the Beyond Radio Network, and I'm on every Saturdays from 2 to 5 Eastern, and basically, whatever comes to mind, I pretty much talk about.
Okay.
I play some music from people that I know, so, you know, I don't just, like, put on CDs of just stuff that a lot of other people have heard and just kind of coast through that, you know. And I have it where people can call in and stuff like that, and just, you know, whatever happens, you know, just happens, and it turns out to be a really fun thing, and I really enjoy it.
TBRN. Now, that's an internet-based site?
Yeah, it's an internet-based station.
And how does one get to TBRN? What is their...
Go to www.tbrn.net, and you can click listen. The designer of the site is brilliant. He's got a lot of stuff up there, too. You know, the schedule, obviously, forums where people can sign up, and you can get show archives for everybody that's on there as well, all the way back to January of this year.
Now, is this a site for blind people or just for people?
For people.
TBRN, Beyond Radio. We should do some things for him, for you. What sorts of other things are there besides your open mic, open mouth talk show?
Well, Andre Louis, you may have heard of him.
I have not, I'm sorry.
He, a lot of people have used his beds and stuff like that on a lot of podcasts and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And he does a show, and he calls it the Louis Band. And he does a lot of talk and a lot of music and performance stuff like that, since he's incredibly talented. Sometimes he'll just get an inspiration. He'll just sit there and write a song on the air, a music bed on the air, and take suggestions from, you know, from listeners and things like that as to, you know, what patch may sound good or what kind of part may sound good with certain backings and things like that. And, you know, those are usually fun segments.
I imagine. It sounds good. TBRN. Is this new? Is this how long has this
been around? We've been around for a little over a year, about a year and a half.
And so you do your show on Saturdays, 2 to 5, you said, Eastern?
Yeah, and that starts up a whole lineup. We have about 10 or 12 hours worth of stuff on Saturday.
Okay, do you...
And a lot of different shows during the week, too, so it's not just me and Andre and Patrick and Steve.
Do you get some phone calls occasionally?
Yeah.
You get people, friends of yours would call in and talk about... you ever talk about politics? I guess not.
No, that dates it. Because we have automation and because we run previous shows, talking about politics, which are very dynamic and obviously date material,
sure,
is very boring to listen to in even weeks or even days after it's been, you know, outdated or old.
Yeah, if you get Newsweek a week late, then there's no point reading it because everything they talk about's already happened.
Yep.
Okay, TBRN, www.tbrn.net. Okay, well, we'll have to go over there and listen. And so you just do a little talk show and play a little music. Are you hand playing that music? Are you doing it all out of a computer? I guess you're doing it with your digital mixer.
Yeah, I just use a board to control levels. I have some analog gear and stuff like that too. A lot of Andre's beds and things like that are on the computer as well.
Okay.
But I still like to have a lot of manual control. Despite the fact that I do have a digital mixer, I still like to have a lot of manual control. I don't want software to do fun stuff for me.
Yeah, because it doesn't always do the same thing the same way every time. That's my only problem with computers. If you go in one day and it'll do one thing one way, and then the next day it may not work that way.
Well, plus radio mistakes are more fun if you do them yourself as opposed to a computer doing them.
And I've been doing this American Classic Country for FTP Radio, and I'm burning more. I'm going to have to start doing it on CDRWs because I started twice, and just because I'm running it by hand, and I've got 5 CD players, and I'm trying to fade and do this and do that, and I'm not used to that. I'm used to doing radio with what we used to call cart machines. You know what they are?
Yeah.
Where you play the commercial, and it would stop itself.
Yeah.
These you have to turn down and stop. So anyway, let's talk about your childhood. We've talked enough about audio. You're 22 years old. Were you born? You're totally blind?
Yeah.
And you started out that way. How did you get blind? What happened?
It's called anathelmia, and I haven't heard a single thing about it other than its name.
You don't know anything about it other than its name?
Yeah, pretty much. I've tried to find, references to it online, and I'm just guessing the only thing about it is that it causes blindness, because I have it, and I'm blind, and that's all I can figure.
You have it, you're blind, and so that's it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it goes. I guess you have brothers and sisters that can see, or they're blind.
I'm an only child.
You're an only child,
mm-hmm.
And your parents, I guess, have no eye problems of any kind.
No.
I'll be darned. So,
pregnancy went well. I was 5 days late, so I wasn't even a preemie.
Wasn't even a preemie.
Mm-mm.
Now, schooling. What did they decide when they wanted to send you to school? Blind school or public school?
No, it was established at first that, and maybe this is a Southern thing too. My parents wanted to raise me. They didn't want somebody paid to care to raise me.
Yeah.
So, blind school wasn't even something they wanted to think about.
Okay.
Not saying that people who go to blind schools or people's parents that send them to blind schools aren't adequate parents, or the people that go to blind schools don't come out as good people, but I'm just saying that was the mindset that, they had.
Well, you were born in 84, right?
Right.
Well, of course, a lot of things have happened in the late 80s and 90s that weren't, a lot of things are available now that weren't, even 40 years ago. It's easier to raise a blind child at home now.
Right.
When I went to school, there was no other choice. They couldn't, my mother had no way to educate me. She did not know Braille. She couldn't educate me, so she sent me to the blind school. But I admire your parents. They decided they were going to raise you. They weren't sending you to blind school, so obviously you went to a public school, quote.
Right. And I had the best of both worlds.
All right.
I had a teacher that taught me Braille. And then when I wasn't doing the Braille stuff, I spent the rest of the time in the classroom.
Uh-huh.
And they were nice enough and consistent enough to work Braille or resource time or whatever it was called in when the other students were doing work. And that allowed me, unless I screwed around and didn't do my work.
Yeah, which may have happened.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Could
to go out and go to music and go to the library and go to PE or recess or whatever you want to call it or think of it,
Now, was this all in the small town where you live now?
Yeah.
So they had a resource teacher there. That's pretty amazing in and of itself.
Well, she came in from Lenore, which is about 25-30 miles away.
Okay, so she didn't come every day.
No, she did.
Oh, she did.
I took that for granted at the time.
Uh-huh.
Because it was more work for me.
Yeah.
To learn Braille and keep up. And I didn't even think about the cost or the time in driving and traveling and things like that.
Yeah.
I just knew that it was work for me and, I had to deal with it and do it.
And so she taught you Braille. Were you able to get some textbooks, some school textbooks in Braille? Or?
Yeah, and I had mixed feelings about that even then because I had to do the pattern series from APH, and I also was expected to keep up with the curriculum that was established by my mainstream teachers.
All right.
And that gave me, theoretically, twice as much work as everybody else, which I never and still to this day don't find, you know, to be fair.
Which you didn't think was a good idea, and you don't still don't think it's a good was.
Well, it made me work very quickly and very efficiently, and or gave me the ability to figure out how to get out of stuff when possible and do it tactfully. So maybe it was valuable after all. I don't know.
Well, you got through it, and that's all that matters. You know, you made it. You obviously graduated from high school.
Oh yeah.
And how was high school? Did you? What did you do? Did you play in the band? Did you?
I was in concert choir.
In concert choir.
And because of the audio thing on the side, I was able to tape some of our concerts senior year because I got a mini disc recorder.
Ah, the old mini disc. So you got to record some of the concerts.
Yeah. And that was cool.
I guess it was. What did you have? A set of outboard microphones, or?
Yeah, it was what is that thing? It's an Audio Technica ATR-25, and it's a great mic for what it is. It's a bit noisy, and the only thing I can get it to work with is that mini disc recorder because it's so low and the Sony preamps are so sensitive. That's the only combination I can get the thing to work on, which is really a shame because it would otherwise be nice with the Eteral R1, which is my current portable solution, and
which
will be until the thing dies.
Which we're going to talk about in just a minute. I got one yesterday.
Nice.
And you're going to tell me how to operate it. but you recorded them in mono, your high school.
No. It was mono.
You have two of these mics.
Stereo. It was a stereo mic.
Oh, this is a stereo mic.
Right.
Okay, but it's all in one case.
Right. It's single.
All right. All right. I don't have one of those. I'd probably need one to go with this Eteral. However, the built-in mics in the Eteral don't sound too bad.
No, there's just a couple peaks you got to EQ out.
And, of course, the thing you don't get with it is the tape, the rumble that you used to get with old tape recorders that had built-in mics, you know.
Yeah.
You get that motor noise.
Mm-hmm.
With these, you don't.
Perfect.
All right, we'll talk about the Eteral in just a minute. You graduated high school. What do you think, or what do you think you're going to do? What are you studying in college? What's going on?
I'm studying communications with a concentration in radio and TV.
You know, somehow I could have answered that question myself.
Well,
somehow I knew that.
Well, you're just good like that. You've been interviewing people.
Is there a college close enough for you to?
I stay during the week and come home during the weekend, which is really cool because I can do my show and I can run sound for my church.
And you
so
can.
I get the best of both worlds too.
And you get to fool with your audio gear on the weekend. How far do you travel to school, and how do you get there?
My parents come and pick me up and drop me off, and it's about 30 or 40 miles or so.
You have an incredibly nice set of parents.
Yeah. But let me just make sure that everybody knows that I wasn't spoiled. I didn't get everything I wanted.
You didn't?
No.
Not yet.
probably not for a while.
Well, you have some incredible parents, and I admire them. I've never met them, but I can assure you they're wonderful people. And they come and pick you up on Friday and then run you back home on Sunday.
Correct.
And you stay in the dorm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you travel with a cane or do you travel with a dog?
With a cane. And the way Gardner-Webb's sidewalks are laid out, it's the most logical because the campus is sort of based in a circle, and so there are sidewalks, and you can shoreline and count sidewalks.
Okay.
And so you can, for the most part, in the central part of campus, get wherever you want to go. Now, the thing about it is that because I'm tired of the dorms, I wanted to move into the apartments, which are sort of on the outskirts of campus. And the only pathway to walk was either walk on the bike trail, which isn't exactly the safest thing, or walk through the woods, which has also got its problems. And they were supposedly going to put down sidewalks to go on the other side of the bike trail, which would be, you know, really far from the main road.
Uh-huh.
But would also offer a straight path, but they haven't exactly gotten around to doing that yet. So that's going to be challenging to figure out what I'm going to do.
Well, I would think that. So you're going to move into an apartment in the fall. You're considering that, and I would think the bike trail would work. You just have to listen real careful when someone was coming.
Yeah, that's true.
And step off the trail. I think that would you could probably do that.
Probably.
Now, but you used an interesting term that I had never heard, that's probably because I never took any mobility training. You said you were shorelining, which means running your cane along the edge.
Correct.
And counting the sidewalks as you go.
Right.
So I guess the only reason I use a cane to take my house is 500 feet back from the road, and on one of the side of the driveway there's a large ditch.
Right.
And I don't want to fall in that ditch, so I guess I shoreline down the driveway.
Correct. Yeah, that's
a good term. I had never heard that. I guess they taught you that term in mobility training.
Yeah, and I didn't have a lot of it. I had it in elementary and some in middle school and a lot in college, but I just did too many things to want to bother with it.
Uh-huh.
And I could pick up on, you know, high school very, you know, easily. And I know a lot of people don't like this, but through school I did have an aide, but she wasn't one of those overbearing types that fed me everything.
Uh-huh.
She was there. If something couldn't be brailled, she read it to me.
And she was a student or she was a teacher?
She was employed.
She employed at the school?
Yeah.
Okay.
As her job, you know, to assist me and other people that, you know, needed similar assistance. But seeing as how I've been the only blind person in the Burke County school system ever,
uh-huh.
You know.
Then she mostly worked with you.
Correct.
Well, I'm sure they found other things for her to do.
Oh, they did. Especially when I was in classes when, you know, I don't know Braille music.
Uh-huh.
So there was nothing anybody could read me in concert choir. Or chamber singers. I just had to learn the part.
You just memorized the part.
And I hate solo work. I refuse to do solos. I cannot. I just lock up when I do solos. I don't mind being in a group.
So you don't mind singing with a group?
No.
All right, let me take a little short break. Then we want to come back and talk about what you think you can do with a degree in radio, television, communications,
okay.
And such. I'm Phil Parr. Derek Lane is our guest, and we'll be right back with more of Blind Like Me. Hang on. Have a live audience today.
We have folks from
all over the nation. A lot of folks from up in Northeast Pennsylvania.
Good morning again. I'm Bob Bartlett.
That was November 2004. Hi, this is Phil Parr, and this November 2006,
we're going to do it again.
We're going to gather at the Sheridan Northeast in Houston, Texas, and have a big party. Opening ceremony Saturday morning. Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell and Cheryl coming Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, lots of dancing and great live music. We'll record a live Blind Handyman show Sunday morning, a live Blind Like Me show Sunday afternoon, and Sunday night more dancing and great live music. If all this sounds like fun to you, why don't you email me and I'll send you the details. My email address is phil@philparr.net. That's P-H-I-L at P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R.net. We'll see you this November in Houston. Let us continue. Derek Lane is our guest, and Derek told me during the break, it would have been all right to have said this, and because we're very informal and just pretty well say what we think, that I had skipped 80% of your life.
Pretty much.
That's a pretty good chunk of one's life. Why don't you go back and fill us in on the 80% I missed? Because I've never met you, and I don't, you know, I'm just asking general questions. But yeah, you take over and tell us what you want us to know.
All right. Well, let's loop around.
Okay, let's do that.
Cutting back.
All right.
I guess because college and my degree in communications came about because of my interests,
mm-hmm.
but getting a degree in communications at a liberal arts school, although I've met a lot of nice people and got some really nice girlfriends out of the process, academically isn't the best way to go because they want to broaden your horizons.
Uh-huh.
In other words, they want to get you as educated as possible about as many things as they can, which boils down to they want your money and they want to make you get into some of their majors that they're really enthusiastic about.
Okay.
But you cut all that crap and then you know, if you can cut all that crap and find out what you like and then enjoy the people that you meet, then it's all good.
Uh-huh.
But if you go to a liberal arts school and you get swept up and you come out and you've ended up not majoring in what you've set yourself to major in when you came in, then you could have gotten yourself in trouble.
Okay. Like, what did they try to get you interested in that you just rejected?
Well, they have a lot of blind students. They've had a lot of blind students in the past. And so I had to make sure that I didn't fit into any established mold that had been set.
Good.
I didn't want to go into social work, for example. I admire people in the field, but it doesn't interest me. I just I can't click. That stuff just doesn't work.
That's not what you want to do.
No.
Okay.
They wanted me to go into English. I can't. If I write something, I have to say it, at least, if not out loud, in my head first.
Okay.
And then I have to make sure that I don't write the way I speak because, you know, although my grammar may be all right, it's still, there's a difference in public speaking and writing.
Certainly.
If you hear somebody say something and you care, then the idea is there. If somebody writes something and although they may have a great idea, but their spelling and grammar isn't the best in the world, then that's where people's attention stops, or at least it seems to stop.
Yes.
And so your thoughts and your feelings just kind of go in the trash.
Well, you intend, you maybe you don't mean to, but I associate people who use bad grammar with ignorance. And I know that's not true. I know that's stereotyping. There may be some very, very intelligent people who use bad grammar, but it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I cannot abide it. It drives me nuts.
I agree.
Especially on women. Oh, don't say that. Excuse me. I just hate women who, and we have hundreds, thousands of them in East Texas.
Well, I hate slang. I hate people that are so lazy that when they write on Messenger, they can't spell words out fully. I cannot stand that.
Okay, but back to your college. They tried to get you, they thought you should be a social worker instead of a broadcaster.
Yeah, that sort of thing, or that I should go dedicated into music, because what I wanted to do, they didn't know how to teach, and so they wanted to kind of slide me into something that they could kind of squeeze me through, but I didn't want that.
That they could teach. Now, do they have a program for broadcast radio television majors at this college?
Yeah, it's very broad, and so you get a little bit of everything, but people like me who like the technical side of it, like to be able to go and do behind-the-scenes work or even some performance or whatever and get something to sound really good and then take pleasure in doing that, that's not taught. Writing scripts
is taught.
And stuff like that is taught. And how to edit by looking at a screen is taught. Listening and thinking about what you're doing and really taking advantage of what you have isn't taught.
Just let me ask you this. Do they have anybody at this college that knows any more about audio than you do?
No.
Thank you.
I hate to say it because it makes me sound like I know more than I do.
I could have answered that question, too.
And I hate to sound like that.
It's okay.
But the sad thing about it is that it's true. The only professor that knew tons and tons and tons more than I knew retired after I had the audio production class. And I was looking forward, because he was my academic advisor and everything, and I had a lot of good ideas, and he liked my ideas. But, of course, he had to go and retire. So that was the end of that.
I'm sure he didn't do it to spite you.
Oh, no.
I mean, it wasn't a personal thing.
One of those turns in life, just one of those things that just
happened.
It was
just time for him to retire. And so, but he did know audio, and he understood audio production and audio. There's a term that you may or may not understand called audio flow. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
Probably, but I'm not sure.
In other words, how to get it from here to there? How to get something from your CD to the CD recorder?
Right.
You could just do it. You could do it by patching, or you could, audio flow. The audio flow to me is getting the most out of your gear. In other words, you have a piece of gear that has 300 orifices, that 300 jacks you could plug in, and there are many different ways to wire many different things. How do you get the most out of that board, or out of that CD player, out of that recorder? How do you get the most? That's audio flow.
Right.
And you don't. There's nobody there that understands that.
No. They have thousands of dollars worth of equipment, and they do not know how to use the stuff. And it's really sad, because they don't trust me to use it either.
Now,
because I think it's a complex to where they have the degree, and if someone with a disability comes in and shows them up,
they won't like that. What do you mean by thousands of dollars? Like, what do they have?
They've got some really nice mics. I can't remember the model numbers, but I remember looking them up, and they ranged anywhere from $150 to $900.
Really?
Yeah. They have some really nice boards. They have a really nice phone interface that they have hooked up wrong.
They do have it hooked up wrong.
They split off an output. Left output of the main mix goes into the phone hybrid. And then...
Okay, that's not how you feed a phone hybrid.
Then it's hooked up to the right channel to keep it from looping into itself.
I got it, but you can only hear it on the right channel, so if you're recording something, you can't pan it to the middle.
Right.
It's only on the right.
Yep.
And you're only feeding... The left channel is the only... The board is the only thing feeding the hybrid.
Right.
In other words, they don't understand the term mix minus.
No.
Well, that's a shame. It really is, because I'm sure this board would provide you with a mix minus.
Yeah.
If it's any kind of board at all, it would. Mix minus is where the phone sees everything but itself.
Yep.
In other words, the phone can see everything you're doing on the board except you not feeding itself back into itself.
Because you get feedback.
Because you get feedback.
Same effect if you have a mic and you hold it up to a speaker.
That's exactly right. So it would be the same thing. So whether you understand audio or not, you'd have sense enough not to feed the phone back into itself. So they have it hooked up wrong. Did you explain that to them?
Yeah.
And they said...
Oh. That was their response. Oh.
Do they have an engineer who came and hooked this equipment up?
Yeah.
Duh. Where is he? What does he know? Nothing.
I don't know.
You've never talked to him?
He's smart on the transmitter end, the stuff that, if you touch it wrong, it can kill you. He knows how to make that stuff work.
Oh, they have a little station there. They have a little low power, what kind of,
Actually 50,000 watts.
FM?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
No.
50 kilowatt FM?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Stereo and everything?
Yeah.
And so they're pretty into radio television.
They try.
Do you get to do shows on this station?
No, because their computer is... I don't even know what automation software it uses, but it only has one sound card in it. And they don't want to take the thing down because they don't trust somebody to actually run two CD players and, cue stuff up and do radio like it used to be done.
Mm-hmm.
They don't trust anybody to do that long enough to see if this thing will work or not.
In other words, to do radio with a couple of CD players where you're actually hand playing, cueing and hand playing music.
Yeah, they don't trust a lot of the people to be able to do that. They want the computer to crossfade and do logs and stuff like that.
Well,
and the result, even if that did work, even if I could get access to that equipment, I couldn't be the person that... Poofed. That's the one disadvantage of using a mic without a windscreen. I need to do something about
that. That's all right. You're fine. Go ahead. You couldn't be...
But that's one thing. I can't be a personality on 88.3 because you play a lot of music and you reach out and you flip a switch... And you say, you're listening to 88.3. The time is blah, 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 blah. This hour of this radio station is brought to you exclusively by, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
Located at something or other and, you know, that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And then you switch to the news, which sometimes comes in, and then sometimes is read live in another studio.
Uh-huh.
And then you play more music. And you take requests. And you say, this is a request by blah, blah, blah.
And JAWS doesn't read the software they're using?
I can't get JAWS on there because it uses software speech and there's only one card. And they don't want to take the thing down to put another card in it to see if it works or not because they don't know if they could get it back up or not. At least that's what they say.
And you would need JAWS to be operating with another sound card so that it wouldn't get on the air.
Right. And I could see and cue up songs and things like that.
And you could tell what they were doing.
With the format of the station, though, I can't be a personality. Not that I may be it's not that I'm great or anything like that, but I couldn't be free to...
Because you can't run the software, you don't know what song's coming up.
No, I mean, I can't even be free to say what I want to say in a way to try to engage listeners.
Uh-huh. Well, do the others who broadcast on this college radio station feel the same way?
If they do, they hide it.
You're pretty much a rebel, aren't you? And so they have all this nice equipment, a 50,000-watt radio station. Do they operate? They don't operate 24 hours a day, do they?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They just put the computer to doing automation, and they have enough promos and things like that to not just have it play song after song.
Really?
But I do some production work.
Okay.
I just come home and do it. And I sound better.
You do it at home, and then take it back on
CD.
On a CD.
And they just do their little computer thing and put it in there.
So you're making good grades in this
in these
classes.
Right.
Now you alluded a while ago to some things for your childhood. We didn't get back around to that. Let's loop back around and talk about. You said some strange things, or you did some strange things, or some strange things happened to you in your childhood, or what were you talking about there?
Well, it's. When I say strange things, just I did some really weird things as a kid that probably a lot of other kids wouldn't do. Of course, a lot of the stereotypical blind audio enthusiasts would probably say the same thing.
All right.
I was never the brave one, though, to take something apart and start putting wires to things while it was still plugged in to see if I could make it do things that weren't designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I could do from the outside... Or when Dad helped me take something apart, you know, I tried to do some stuff. Like, when I was 5, I wanted a dual cassette deck. I wanted to be able to copy tapes.
You wanted to be able to copy tapes?
Yeah. Now, I wanted a dual cassette deck. I had two little boom boxes. They were like maybe $20 a piece.
So you were born at, what did we decide, 84?
84, yeah.
And so this was 89 or 90.
Yeah.
We had not been given compact discs. We had compact discs to play, but we didn't have any to record them.
No.
I didn't have
a CD player for a while after that either.
So you wanted to be able to copy tape to tape.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, get like songs onto one tape so I didn't have to keep finding different tapes and stuff like that.
Okay.
Well... I couldn't do that. My parents are like, no, you don't need that. You don't, you know, maybe your birthday when you get older. Maybe, you know. Which
so?
Taught me the value of stuff.
Yes.
But I just got something when I wanted it. I would value nothing.
Uh-huh.
And that would be very detrimental. And they knew that. But anyway.
But you had two little boom boxes.
Yeah.
But neither one of them had a line out.
No.
Both of them had earphone jacks.
No. One of them did. But the other one had no input.
The other one had no input, and one of them had an earphone jack. So you were in trouble. There's nothing you could do, was there?
Nothing I could do.
Okay, so what did you do?
Well, somebody found a mic, one of those little mics that you could use to talk on FM. You know, and it would go for 6 feet.
Yeah,
maybe,
not
a good day.
Not very far, yeah.
No, I mean, you know, this was like bottom of the line.
I know what you did. One of them had a radio in it, and so you played your songs into the mic and copied them off the radio.
I did that at first.
Into the other boombox, except they sounded terrible.
I did it. That's the way I did it at first.
Okay.
But then when the thing died, I wanted to see what was in it, and Dad took it apart.
Uh-huh.
And the thing was actually hard to get apart.
Uh-huh.
For as cheap as it was, I remember he having to do some weird, you know, a lot of stuff to actually get the thing apart. And yeah, that's when I was introduced to what a circuit board looked like and all that stuff. And it was obviously a simple thing. It was the mic and then the wires that went to the little transmitter or whatever, you know, that was at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the battery and all that. But I got the idea to what if since the mic was dead, take that off, take those wires. And then I had a dead set of headphones, so I got the brilliant idea to twist the wires
to tie the headphones onto the transmitter and use the headphones as a microphone. No?
No, it was different, although that would have probably worked better. Dad cut the wires off the headphones, so I had an eighth-inch wire with two bare wires on the end.
Uh-huh.
So I think he actually came up with this idea too. He peeled the wires back, and we twisted the wires from the bare wire onto the bare wire where the mic used to be.
Okay.
And that let me send the signal from the headphone jack to the radio, the other boombox. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. I don't know how it managed to do that, because there's so many technical reasons why that shouldn't work, impedance and so forth.
Well, for a 5 or 6 year old kid, that was a major breakthrough.
I thought it was great. And it lasted a day.
What happened?
Mom. It didn't look good.
Oh.
And so she's like, there's all these extra wires hanging off of this thing. If you could just... And she went at it with some scissors, and that was the end of it.
With some scissors?
Because she didn't like all those wires hanging off. She's like,
oh,
you could just trim this up.
You don't have a...
It would look so bad if people came in here.
You don't have a basement that you could go hide in or anything.
No.
No.
And we do, since we've moved, but it's not optimal for that kind of thing.
That kind of thing. So Mom trimmed it up with wire and with the scissors.
And that was the end of my tape copying.
And it was the end of your tape copying.
Yeah.
That's a good story. So that's how you got started your first foray into audio.
Into the mechanics of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, during that time, too, I thought my dad's stereo with the 8-track deck was the coolest thing in the world, too, because it sounded a lot nicer than any of the stuff I had, because it was bigger, and it was Dad's, obviously, too.
Well, we were getting toward the 90s, and it was time for them to buy you a computer. When did they first do that?
The Lions Club got me a computer. And it was some IBM thing, and I still have it, but I don't have a clue what was in the thing. It used a program called RDS Learn.
Mm-hmm.
And they could set it up to where there was this Braille pad, and I have no clue what it's called, but it had the alphabet on it. But you could press down on each of the characters, and it would say something. I have no clue how they set that up.
Okay.
But they could type in the software and make it say whatever they wanted.
Okay.
So they put some rhymes on it and stuff like that. And I thought that was cool. And then when I got into second grade or so, you know, I started learning to type. And, you know, I could type things out and print there and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And because of the fact that this is a small town, I figured that was that.
Yeah.
That's what computers did, and that's great. And
no.
Until my aunt got a computer with Windows 3.1 on it.
And she was on the internet.
No.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't get... We didn't get the internet. I mean, other people had it, but I wasn't exposed to the internet until 1999.
Really?
Yeah. So I had no clue about the potential of computers. I got a Windows 95 computer in 97, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
But you didn't you didn't have JAWS.
No, I had JAWS, too.
Well, you had JAWS, so you had Windows 95 and JAWS. Okay.
No internet.
Well, yeah, but...
But it was still cool. It did a lot more than I ever thought a computer could do in its...
Than you thought a blind person could make a computer do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was printing stuff out, and... There was some little program that came with it that let you do basic cards. It was sort of a wizard thing, so it was all accessible. It wasn't meant for a blind person. It just so happened that it could do it.
Yeah, this blind person could read.
And
JAWS
that was the coolest thing in the world, and I thought sound recorder was cool.
Did they have a little sound recorder then on the computer?
That was just the Windows one.
Whoa.
And was all right.
But it wouldn't record, as I recall, it wouldn't record very long. I mean, it would just record short.
It would record a minute, unless if you recorded just minutes at a time... And let it build up. And then you went to the top of the thing, just move the little slider to the left,
mm-hmm.
delete it after current position. Then you could record for as long as you had recorded before, and you could do it all in one take without having to have it stop and then restart whatever you're doing.
And now.
Yeah. I had nothing better to do.
Well, you know, that's...
See what I could squeeze. I mean, because that's the way I've always... I've taken something and always tried to get the most out of it as I possibly could.
All right. What else happened to you that was strange when you were a child?
Well, I mean, I had a lot of sighted friends, too, which was good. And so there was just a lot of... Fortunately, I never broke any bones, but I did have, you know, some stuff that... You know, I mean,
so you had a lot of sighted friends, so you rode the bike with them, or you did what with them, jumped on a trampoline?
Or stuff like that.
Stuff like that that sighted kids do. Nothing wrong with that.
No, it was great.
Nothing wrong with that. That's what blind kids ought to do. They, you know, lack of sight oftentimes robs blind children of their childhood.
Yeah.
But no, that's good that you did that.
I was out there, and because, you know, Dad was mechanically minded, you know, I saw what the inside of a car looked like. I knew... how, you know, buildings were built. You know, he does some he used to do some carpentry stuff, so I knew all about that stuff.
Okay, so you learned what a wall looked like on the inside.
Yeah, and stuff like that.
Yeah, see, I didn't learn a lot of that stuff till I grew up, of course, I learned a lot about radio. My father was a ham radio operator.
Yeah.
So he, you know, we'd take radios apart all the time.
Well, that's cool.
And he'd fix a radio, and I would take it the next day and test it and make sure that it worked fine before he gave it to the customer. That was my job.
Nice. I bet you love that.
Oh, I absolutely love the good ones. The good ones, sometimes we'd end up keeping, just telling them they couldn't be fixed, and we'd end up with them.
There you go.
All right, Derek, we've killed almost an hour. Let's take a little break, then we want to talk about your goals and what you think you can do with your degree when you get out of college. You're listening to Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. Derek Lane is our guest. Be back in just a sec. A website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
From time to time here on Blind Sights, I'd like to feature sites about radio production equipment. I'd like to talk about www.bradleybroadcast.com. Bradley Broadcast is another one of these sites where you can buy microphones or mixers or phone interfaces, any kind of thing dealing with audio production or radio production. They have a good turnaround time, their prices are pretty competitive, and their site's very accessible. What you really can do with them, what I usually do is I actually call them on the phone. Although they do have a website, you really can't order over the website. And what they encourage you to do is call them, but they have an 800 number, and it works very well. I would give their site a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. The site again is www.bradleybroadcast.com. For blind sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
Our guest is Derek Late. I'm Phil Parr, and we'll stumble on here. So you're going to end up with a degree. What are you? You're a sophomore, junior, senior? What are you now
in college? I'm a senior.
You're a senior. So you're going to graduate this year, next spring?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you think you can do? What are you going to try to do with your degree?
Well, I have more experience outside of it than in it, but because I've had to do work, I've done work for 88.3.
Uh-huh.
And I do have a show on TBIN, which I really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know some about music as well,
uh-huh,
and stuff like that, you know, I know enough to be able to make a lot of beds and things like that. But, you know, as far as that stuff goes, I think Andre is one of the...
Now, you talk about making beds. Are you talking about playing instruments from scratch and putting a bed together, or how do you make a bed?
Well, that's the kind of stuff that Andre does. But, I mean, I can take something and edit it, you know, and size it down in SoundForge and things like that. And I do have a couple of keyboards. So if I do have an idea, you know, I can put it together and have it sound.
So you're a SoundForge user?
Yeah.
Okay, so you do the editing on the computer, and then you can put it wherever you want it, on disk or flash card or whatever.
And most of the time for the MIDI stuff, I either use the sequencers built into the keyboard, keyboards themselves, because I have an Insonic TS-12 and a Yamaha Motif 6. Or I use a program called QWS, that stands for Quick Window Sequencer, and James Bowden, who is also blind, wrote that program. And it's a really nice program as well.
In other words, you can put notes in sequence in it, and it will play them back to you. So you don't have to sit there and play the fast scale or the fast lead or the fast whatever you want the little thing to be.
Yeah.
You can play it and put, as long as you put the proper rests in, it will play that back to you.
Right. And because you're manipulating data and not sound, and obviously, data is data in a computer, but when I refer to data versus sound, I'm referring to actual commands as opposed to audio. You can speed it up and slow it down with no consequences to the way it sounds, with no artifacts or no pitch changes or anything like that.
Well, you're working with ones and zeros, whereas you're not working with audio. Whereas if you speed it up, well, you're going to raise the pitch and get this Mickey Mouse sound. Or if you slow it down, you get. And if you're working with ones and zeros, binary language, you speed it up, slow it down, do anything you want to with it.
Yeah, it just takes longer for a key to be pressed and a key to be released. If you're playing a MIDI sequence really slowly versus the same thing to happen if you're playing it, you know, faster.
Well, and if you understand MIDI and you understand how to get MIDI files from the Internet, there are billions of them up there.
Oh, yeah.
Don Pat, my friend who does the Handyman Show with us, is just now getting into MIDI. And he's, of course, found a place where you can go get the music, sheet music, to any song you want, any song you can name. And he's just thrilled to death about that. And you can get the music, and then if it has a French horn you don't like, you can just take it out.
Yeah.
Because it's just ones and zeros. I don't understand how ones and zeros play music, but they do. So, all right, so you're out of college. It's next spring. It's a spring of 2007. What are you going to do? What do you think you're going to do? What do you think you can do?
Well, I have so many ideas, but it's just, you know, I'm running into walls as to how I can make myself marketable. The skills that I have, the editing and mastering skills that I have, especially with projects where I'm doing tape restoration and stuff like that, which I've also been talking about on my show, going through all my old tapes and restoring those and things like that. You know, that's given me a lot of experience in that area. But the skills are so obscure that it's hard to find work in those areas.
Hard to be able to market that.
And I even knew that when I went into it. I knew that from day one. I knew, even on the most basic of basic levels, if, I mean, to put it bluntly, if you want to get a girl, you may as well be, you're going to have a better chance if you're an athlete versus if you're an audio nerd. That's just the way it works, because if you're out
there... Now, wait a minute. Let's just don't pass that by. You'll have a better chance of getting a girl if you're an athlete than you will if you're an audio nerd.
Yes, and the reason
you said
that is because even if you're not an athlete, but if you're doing something that's very obvious, that can be attractive, it's a lot more appealing for people than if you're doing something behind the scenes. Because
Eric, let me tell you something. Let me explain one little thing to you before we quit here, okay?
Okay.
The girl you get being an audio nerd may be a lot more desirable than the girl you get as an athlete. Trust me.
I just got to find her.
I've been an... you will. I've been
but
an
I
audio...
I mean, fortunately, I have been raised in, you know, in sighted surroundings, so I'm not permanently locked in this room, you know, doing audio stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be laying in bed talking about native sampling rate of DirectX plugins and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, so I'm not trying to find, nor do I want to find, somebody that's...
Who knows those kinds of things?
All I'm asking is somebody to be able to enjoy the results.
Well, I'm sure that someday a lot of people will enjoy the results, but you're going to have to find a job doing this. You're going to have to find somebody who wants your skill and is willing to pay you to do what you do. Okay, you know that. I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
It's just finding it.
It's just finding that.
And that's the only problem with the liberal arts schools versus going to a school that specializes in this sort of thing. Because a liberal arts school can place you in jobs that are more broad.
Yeah.
But if you have a very specific skill, they don't have the resources to know where to place people with very specific skills.
And with a very specific disability.
Right.
If you know this as well as I do. If you make it, you're going to have to do it yourself. Nobody's.
Yeah.
Now, tell us one more time. We're just about out of time. You didn't think we'd kill an hour, but we did.
It's been fun.
It has been, sir, and I've enjoyed it very much. Tell us one more time. Your show will be on Saturday afternoon from 2 to 5 Eastern time. Is that right?
Correct. Except,
and
except for this Saturday, because we're leaving for the beach tomorrow.
You're leaving for the beach tomorrow. Well, have fun at the beach, except that the following Saturday it won't be on either, because you won't be back, will you?
No, I'll be back.
You'll be back the following Saturday.
But there are tons of archives up there of my material and that of a lot of...
Give me the address again, because we're running down on the clock here.
All right, tbrn.net. My show is called WDGL-FM.
W-D-E-L-F-M?
D-G-L-F-M. Those are my initials.
D-G-L.
Correct.
W-D-G-L-F-M, and it's... One more time.
TBRN.net.
TBRN.net. Right. Derek, good luck. Hold on just a second, all right?
All right.